You're listening to The Osiris Munir Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
My wall is coming along, you guys. Check it out. Anyway, hey, welcome all my looms, all my luminaries. I think I forgot to give you a shout out last week, so I'm making up looms and luminaries. Thank you. Let's get right into the show. Announce the sponsor, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. You know he's bad. Senior real estate and probate specialist, we'll hook you up in whatever you need to be hooked up in. So check him out. Shout out to all those who choose love over chaos. Shout out to my new friends, Juan Rivera and Moe's Towing for the great vibe. And James at Mr. Pickle. That was one pickle of a pickle. So I'm glad I stopped at Mr. Pickle. Today, welcome back to the set, everyone. We have an exciting returning guest today. As I told you last week's show, we're going to still talk more about MJ, Michael Jackson, with an expert, my baby, on Hollywood showbiz and the people that we think we know, what we hear in the news, follow, whatever, this person actually knows them. Let me welcome to the set again, Jeffrey Mark, author, Emmy Award winner, all of
Yay.
That. Yes. Hey,
there's my light. Okay.
There's your name. Hey, Jeffrey. So first of all, let me show the audience. Sam, our wonderful guy that's the owner of LA Talk, sent this to me and I got so excited, but it's one of many posts that Jeffrey Mark, see that handsome face right there? Got called in and they wanted to talk to an expert and they called him. So, well, first of all, thank you for coming to the set again. Love your presence.
Thank you.
And first question out, the California Post, all of the posts, New York Post, California Post, Daily Mail, all of them carried some pieces of conversation from interviews that you had about the one and only King of Pop, Michael Jackson. And his movie is out, Michael, if you have not seen it. So given the type of personality that Michael had, how did you come to know him?
Oh, golly. It's a funny thing. You know this about me, that stuff just sometimes seems to happen to me. Right place, right time, or you know, someone taps me on the shoulder and, oh, hello, I'm in the middle of something. Michael, as those of you who are fans of Michael's and have followed his story, especially the last few years of his life, know that there was a man, Dr. Arnold Klein, who was his dermatologist and was involved with Michael. I don't mean romantically. I mean in his life and his medications and his lifestyle. Arnie, for whatever reasons, bless his heart, had an enormous crush on me. And Arnie pursued me romantically for like a year. But I didn't like the approach, and this will fit in with Michael in just a second, because Listen to the approach. I'll send a limo for you. I'm going to Aspen. I'll send a plane for you. Does your mother like opera? We'll fly your mother in and I'll send a limo and we'll go to, and I say, you know, Arnie, stop. I'm not for sale. If you want to get to know me better, invite me over for dinner. But you don't need to spend 3 cents. And, you know, I'm sorry, that does not impress me. I know lots of wealthy people. That's not the way to get me to spend time with you. So indeed, Arnie invited me over to his mansion in the Hancock Park area of Los Angeles.
Beautiful.
And he had a German couple working for him who intensely disliked me. I used to call the woman Brunhilde. You will sit here and you won't make noise and you won't go in the living room and you won't do this and you won't do it. It's like, wow, I feel so welcome here. But that led to other dinners at which Michael and other doctors and attorneys and his entourage, I was a part of that for a little while. Because not because I wanted to date Arnie. Arnie was a very strange man, brilliant, but very strange, if you get my meaning. But because once I saw what was going on, and once, as someone who is now 37 years clean and sober, I don't, maybe I was 15 years clean and sober at this time, maybe, I saw Michael's in trouble. Maybe I can help. That's why I stuck around, to see what I could do. So that's how I came into the fold here, so to speak, of people who were, and I don't include myself in this, people who were making money off of Michael, using Michael, kissing up to Michael, so they could go to someone, ooh, Michael Jackson and I, blah, 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 blah. And I want to dispel something. I'm going to use your platform, Osiris.
Yeah, please.
Because I did not pursue the interview I gave. It wasn't like I called my publicist, Harlan Bowl. Harlan, keep healing, baby. Harlan had a hip replacement surgery the other day. Get me out there. Let's use Michael's name. Not at all, not at all, not at all. A man from the BBC knows me. He figured it out and came to me. Would you be willing to talk, since the movie is out? And I asked Harlan and an attorney, and I got the go-ahead as long as I left one piece of the puzzle out, which I'm not telling you either, because I don't want to get sued. But he gave permission to do it. I did it, and this thing exploded. Because those of you who don't read the three papers we're talking about, the New York Post is one of the largest daily newspapers in the United States. Daily Mail is one of the largest daily newspapers in all of Europe and the United Kingdom. The California Post is new, but it's hot, hot, hot. And millions of people saw this article. I have been fortunate in a very long career to have wonderful people enjoy my work and wonderful people be fans. And I've gotten just wonderful support until now. I got hate mail for this like you would not believe.
What? Why?
Because either people didn't actually read the article. They accused me of stuff that's, I don't say anything like that in the article. Oh, you sold him out. You've knifed him in the back. No, I didn't. And I think people these days just like to get angry. They look for a reason to get them hurt so they can explode with righteous indignation. And nobody threatened me. If they had, I would have gone to the police and there'd be a bigger story here. But nobody threatened me. It wasn't like I'm feeling... But people got very upset. Not anybody who knew me. The hate mail all came from people who are not Facebook fans or Instagram fans, or these are people I've never heard of. And you know, I just blocked them and went on with my life.
And they don't know anything about entertainment. I tell people this all the time. All of these people that all of a sudden you have the internet and you exposed to certain things about industries that you would never be exposed to, please reserve your judgments. Entertainment is multi-layered. It's a multi-layered industry. There's people come and go all the time. You may not hear people years and all of a sudden they do a new movie and there they are again, blah, blah, blah. You know, those kind of layers are entertainment. So please, please, people out there that call yourself children of the light, don't judge people and you don't really know whole stories. It's unfair and it's slanderous and it will come back to you. How would you feel if you got judged and no one knew you and you had to be like, oh no, I didn't really mean, I didn't say that. Same thing. So put yourself in other people's shoes. It might help you along
the way. I mean, how would you like it if I came to where you worked and said, hey, you're really lousy in bed. Stop being a sex worker. You wouldn't like that.
No.
So this is what I do. And but please know, folks, I did not go, ooh, a movie is coming out. How can I make money off of this? First of all, I wasn't paying a penny for the interviews. And it's multiple interviews and video, and it's going to be on the BBC as well eventually. BBC is the British Broadcasting Corporation, for those who don't know what that is.
Yes, yes.
I've made no money off of this. Osiris, you're the only show I've been on talking about it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm honored.
You should be, because I've turned down stuff, but you're different. We have a history, and I trust you.
Thank you.
And I love LA Radio, Talk Radio, because I have a long history with LA Talk Radio. Right. And the man who owns all of this, Sam, is a habibi to me, a friend. So I came on for all of that.
Thank you.
But I'm talking probably too much. Just it's become a thing in my life. At a time where I'm really busy with new projects, and I have some friends who have either just passed away or who have been very, very ill. So it's like, folks, you know what? I have a life, and I neither want nor need to deal with other people's anger.
Well, let's talk about, before we talk about your friends, since you mentioned it, let's talk about a few of the people that have passed away. I want to bring the reality around that we all have to go.
And I will answer any questions you want to ask about Michael and me. I mean, that's fine. That's why I'm here.
We're going to get back into that, but I want to express empathy and sympathy to those who have gone on. I wanted to just add one little piece of information. This is a cycle we call life. So one reason that Jeffrey and I and Sam and other people like us don't have time for these little BS problems that everybody out there seems to have is because life is really something to be treasured and lived. And it's a lot of stuff that goes on in life. So please involve yourself in your life and don't waste your time involving yourself in other people's lives that don't have anything to do with you. So Jeffrey, what did you want to say about those who have passed that we adore and treasure?
Well, It's far and away from Michael for a moment, but
that's okay.
Whenever you want. I was fortunate enough many, many, many years ago. There was a wonderful man named Jack Riley, who was a wonderful comedy actor. He was a regular on the Bob Newhart show in the 1970s. He played Bob's craziest client, Mr. Carlin. Bob and I had Bob, listen to me. Jack and I had a relationship. And Jack threw himself a birthday party one year, and Johnny Crawford from the wonderful iconic television kid, Johnny Crawford from the Westerns and things he did as a kid, became a musician and big time band leader and things. He was performing and I sang. And at this party was a man named Howard Storm. Howard had been a pretty big nightclub comedian of the 1950s and 60s. He had been all over the Borscht Belt, all over Las Vegas, and he did really well. He never became a superstar, but he did really well. What he did become a superstar in is transitioning from being a comedy performer to being a director. And Howard Storm directed like almost every episode of Mork and Minnie. He directed countless classic sitcoms. So, and Jack is now gone. And so I always mourn for Jack. And it was very strange. We thought nobody knew. And at his memorial service, Bob Newhart comes over to me. You know, Bob was a very,
I love Bob,
hands off, not touchy feely guy at all. And Bob came over to me and kissed me on the cheek.
Oh.
And said, "I'm sorry for your loss."
Oh.
He knew. We didn't think anybody knew, but we've lost Bob since then.
We're all sorry for your loss.
Well, thank you. Well, Jack's gone a number of years now. So, you know, the pain is there, but I've gotten way used to it. And, you know, I have a complicated personal life because the people in my life also had other relationships. That's just how it worked out. So we'll do a whole show about Jeffrey Mark's complicated personal life.
Yeah, just on you.
But to get to the story we're trying to tell here. So Howard Storm, and there were other celebrities there as well, had started a group called Yarmy's Army, named for Dick Yarmy, who was the brother of Don Adams from Get Smart. Yarmy was their real family name. Dick was also a comedian, but he didn't become anywhere near as famous as Don. I was very close to Don. Dick died from cancer. And the comedians who kept taking him out to lunch every week to keep him going, Dick said, it's these lunches I'm living for. The doctors gave him like 90 days. He lived for over a year. And he said, just to go to the lunches. Well, when he died, they formed Yarmy's Army in his honor.
Oh.
And the biggest names in comedy belong to this. We met once a month for dinner and did shows to raise money in his name for people who had been in show business, had careers, were names, but either because of age or bad illness or bad financial decisions or divorces were facing hard financial times.
Yes.
And we gave them money under the wire to help them out. Mm-hmm. When I say famous comedians, I'm talking about Buddy Hackett. I'm talking about Jonathan Winters. I'm talking about Pat Arrington Jr. I'm talking about Don Knotts. I'm talking Howard Morris.
Wasn't Shecky Green in that pile? No,
Shecky would visit from time to time, but he wasn't a regular. Mm-hmm.
So you're talking the classics.
Shelley Berman.
Yes.
Louis Nye. On it, just I could name 12 more names that you would know. And time went on and our group began to thin out as people began to pass away. It is one of those things, it happens in all walks of life, but especially in show business. Mm-hmm. If you're lucky enough to be mentored by the generations that came ahead of you, or before you, I should say, really, you're going to lose them if you live long enough yourself.
At some point, yeah.
Well, we were a group of about 40 people on and off, you know, whoever would show up that month because people were busy working and doing other things. I think there's three of us left. Howard was the ringleader. Howard was one of the nicest human beings you'd ever want to meet. And I came home from being out and about to find out that Howard had passed away and that his wonderful wife, Patricia, had predeceased him by a few months. Oh. So I just want to mention Howard Storm's name. Howard was a brilliant comedy guy. He was a wonderful, wonderful director. And Howard helped countless numbers of people in show business who needed medication, needed doctors, needed food, needed rent money, needed rides to doctors, needed to be remembered, needed to be told, hey, you're still someone, we still love you. And I was a part of it. I don't take credit. I'm just saying I know all of this because I was the guy who called everybody. Mm-hmm. I'm the one who said, what do you need? Okay, tell me. We'll make it happen. Howard made it happen. Our friend Ron Carey, a wonderful comedian from Barney Miller. And Ron
was a Buddhist. I met him.
Ron had a stroke on the phone with me one night.
Wow.
It was Howard who got the ambulance and got him safe. Mm-hmm. Steve Landisberg from Barney Miller was a member of our group. Mm-hmm. Hal Linden came once in a while.
I know Hal Linden.
We had big hitters in that group. I mean, you would sit there and go, how can I possibly be sitting with these people? Mm-hmm. And it's a funny thing, if we can talk just for one more minute about the group. So I was brought in, certainly the youngest person in the group.
Okay.
And as far as I was concerned, the least famous, as far as I was concerned. Mm-hmm. Turns out that wasn't true, but that's how I felt about it. But and this is not a secret. I just told you I had a relationship with a man. I was the only openly gay person there. And I took, you know, comedians can slice and dice you with their words. And I took an awful lot of flack from people there who they were either testing me or they were just homophobic.
Just negative. Yeah.
Just negative.
Negative people.
And so that you don't get sued, I will leave out the name of this person.
Okay. Thank you.
But there was a person there who would publicly needle me in these dinners. And a book came out. Oh, by the way, before I tell the story, I always forget, am I allowed to use four-letter words on this show or not?
Yes. Okay. I mean, you know, because it's in the context of you talking about a story. You're not just like blasting out four-letter words.
I'm just warning you. So, folks, if four-letter words bother you, turn the volume down. But it's a funny story. So this man, hey, Jeff, there's a new book out that says that Paul Newman is bisexual. Is that true? Did you? ... And I'd had enough of this. And I said, we'll call him Person. I said, you know, Person, just because I let you suck my cock once, you think I know about everything gay? You couldn't breathe for about 4 minutes from all of the laughter. And he never did that again. Because when you stand up to a bully, they stand down. Because nobody there discussed their personal life. We were there to discuss comedy. People didn't even discuss their wives and children and grandchildren unless, heaven forfend, they had a sick wife or something. Then they would bring it up. Hey, would you pray for Sarah? She's ill. But other than that, we didn't talk about sex. We talked about comedy. That's what we were there for.
Okay, so someone's been doing their research. Because the latest Kevin Hart's roast, Dwayne Johnson comes out, sits in a chair, and tells Kevin, you little midget or whatever, because bend down and do it. Suck it. And everybody in the audience is roaring. So someone's been doing their homework. And I figure because it's Dwayne Johnson, it was a little safer to have him do a joke of that type versus someone that was really raw, you know, or something made. And I was like, you know, where it's still comical, but not dirty.
It's a funny thing about roasts. People don't understand what roasts really are. Roasts got started by the Friars Club. I was a member of the Friars Club. Okay. I was at real, honest Friars Club roasts, not the ones you see on television.
Club in Beverly Hills?
There were two. Okay. The original Friars Club was in New York City.
Oh.
After World War II, Milton Berle, who had been a big part of the one in New York, wanted that kind of fraternity for the West Coast. So Milton and some other people started the Beverly Hills Friars Club. The two groups were interconnected, meaning if you belong to one, you belong to the other for membership. And Jack Riley got me into the Friars Club. So at the Friars Club roasts, the idea was to be as filthy, dirty as you possibly could, to embarrass the person, to show respect. We love you so much. We think you're so good that we're going to step on you and we know you can take it. So we're not going to say, I love you. We're going to say nasty things to show our respect to you. And this had been going on for years and years and years and years and
years.
And often Milton Berle was the subject of the humor.
Of the ridicule.
Because Milton, bless his heart, was very blessed between the legs. And everybody knew about it. So the jokes that came out because of that.
No, you did not.
You know, Milton Berle cannot have safe sex anymore because they run out of silos.
Wonder what kind of protection he had to use back in those days.
The words that came out of his mouth were good protection.
I won't get sued.
Yes.
You guys, go look at Kevin Hart's roast.
Yes.
So you can see exactly how Dwayne Johnson and Kevin Hart played off of each other's sexuality without being sexual. So you don't get it twisted and go back and said, we said something that wasn't true, because you have to watch the roast in order to understand how it played into it. And it was
the article I was in.
Yes.
To understand what I said. If you don't read the article and just read the headlines, you will come across a different idea.
That's what I was alluding to. So be careful when you when people say things versus you going doing your own research, like I know some of you do. So second question back to Michael.
Yes, ma'am.
Out of all of the siblings, who do you feel that he was closest to, if any? I always thought it was Janet, but I don't know.
I had to make something clear. It wasn't like Michael and I were talking 2 o'clock in the morning on the phone. Michael and I, our conversations, for the most part, were about the wonderful people we admired. Okay. We talked about Fred Astaire. We talked about Sammy Davis Jr. We talked about Gene Kelly. We talked about Ella Fitzgerald. We talked about Lucille Ball. We talked about people who had helped him fashion his sense of who he was as a performer, who inspired him, who he copied, because we all copy a little bit the people who come before, and who he thought were like just the absolute greats. And in his case, he would go to Fred Astaire's house. He would go to Sammy Davis's house, and they would mentor him and teach him at various ages of his life. That was the predominance of what we discussed. It came around to his childhood because at one dinner, the subject of fathers came up. And, you know, everyone took a turn and I said, I'm sorry. I can't be a part of this conversation. My father molested and tortured me, talking about my father's not pleasant dinner conversation. It isn't pleasant any kind of conversation. And that led to Michael and I talking about father and son relationships and being touched as a child, which are two separate things. So I am not mentioning anyone who might have touched him. I am not implying any kind of father. I'm not saying that at all. But in that, the subject came up. And I realized that Michael did not understand why it was wrong. To him, that was playtime that was to be happily remembered. The beatings he got when he was a kid, that's a separate thing. That is known, that was not a secret.
Right.
The article makes it sound like that's all Michael and I talked about. No. But we didn't talk about his relationship with his siblings. In my memory, he mentioned LaToya the most. But that could have been
anything.
In a time. You know, when you have a lot of brothers and sisters, as you get older and younger and change and stuff, the relationships change. So I couldn't tell you his whole life. Who was he closest to? Who did I hear about the most? LaToya.
Okay. So that leads me to my third question.
You may have as many as you like.
Have you seen the movie, Michael?
No.
Okay, so I can't ask you that. I thought perhaps I wanted to know if you thought of how true to life it was. So let me give my other question.
Well, I can answer it a little bit.
Okay, good.
But I do know that they don't go anywhere near any of this in the film. Yes, and I'm told it's a good movie. I'm told it's an entertaining movie. I'm told by people closer than I to the subject that minus the things it does not discuss, it handles his music and his career very, very well. So bravo to you for doing it. I just don't understand how you can make a movie like that and completely ignore this kind of stuff. Because whatever happened to Michael when he was young, whoever it was that touched him, and that Michael had a drug problem, is very, oh gosh, I was about to make the awfulest pun, germane, one of his brothers, germane to the conversation. And I don't know why that was left out other than whoever was producing this movie was afraid of legalities.
Yes.
But at least the specter of it should have been discussed. Mm-hmm. If you're going to do a biopic of someone, you know, the days when they would do biopics of the greats like Al Jolson and Fanny Bryce and their movies, I mean, yes, they existed and there were two or three facts that were right. The rest of it was fiction. Today, we expect a little bit more from films like this. And I am surprised that they didn't bother to do that. You know, it would be like if someone came to me and said, we want to turn your book on Ella Fitzgerald into a movie. And by the way, I really wish you would. Her family would like it to happen. Her foundation would like it to happen. I've got the book. I have the rights. Call me. Especially if you're an African-American director, because that's what we want. Mm-hmm. But if they said to me, you can do the movie, but Jeff, the part where she was raped and tortured at the girls' reformatory, yeah, we're not going to do that. I said, well, and we're not going to talk about her time on the streets, and we're not going to talk about her living in a house of prostitution as a lookout. Well, then you're leaving out all the building blocks that help make her.
Who she is. Yeah. Her story.
Why? You don't have to judge the events. Just report them. Let the audience judge them. The judging should be, all right, X, Y, and Z happened. How did that affect the person? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's terribly interesting. With Michael, it's the same thing. X, Y, and Z happened to Michael Jackson when he was young, when he's in middle, when he was getting older. Michael and I are like just a few days apart in age. Now he'd be a senior citizen. Well, how would have all of that affected him if he'd lived? That to me is fascinating.
Yes.
And I've rarely met someone who accomplished as much as he did, who was such a man-child. Brilliant, focused, knowledgeable beyond belief about his craft, about the business of show, and how to put on a show. So both sides of that. I don't mean the money part. That he knew nothing about. That was other people took care of that. But as far as the exigencies of life, Michael was an innocent. And usually people who are like that don't accomplish very much in life. Hmm. Because they live their lives as if they're still a child. Their outlooks on life and their focuses are childlike, right, and even worse, childish. I don't think Michael was childish, but he was very childlike.
Like, I don't want to run out of time, but I wanted to ask you a quick question just to intervene since you brought up Ella Fitzgerald.
Yes, ma'am.
Why is it that there is so much more focus on Nina Simone and not Ella? On IG, I paid attention. TikTok, IG.
Because it comes.
It's all Nina Simone. Nina Simone. I'm like, where's Ella Fitzgerald?
It comes and goes. A new release, a new song, something charts that was re-released.
Oh.
Nina Simone, no disrespect to Miss Simone at all, is not a tenth of the star that Ella Fitzgerald was. There are Billie Holiday fans who ask, why is Ella better known than Billie Holiday? Mm. Well, because Ella lived. Billie died. And Ella was a bigger recording star. It doesn't take away from Billie's star. So why certain people, why in the heck has there not been a good movie made about Louis Armstrong, the king of jazz? There's nothing. Hmm. I've written the definitive book on Ella Fitzgerald. The people involved with her want a good movie done and a good documentary done. Mm-hmm. I cannot find African-American artists, writers, directors, people who want to touch the project.
I might know someone.
Well, then we'll talk off camera.
Yes.
Because this is a wanted.
Yes. Thing.
And the story is so compelling. But I would like, before we get off the air and before we get off of Michael, I've been a very, very, very lucky redhead. This year, I have been in the press a lot. I was all over the press. I was on CNN. I was in the New York Times when Rob Reiner died. Mm-hmm.
You're out there.
Strangely enough, today at my advanced age, I'm a bigger star than I've ever been. So thank you for that, folks. But you know what? None of this was because these last few things I've talked about. I didn't pursue it. This is the press coming to me.
Came to you.
Either me directly or through my publicist, Harlan Bull. But, you know, I was at a Hanukkah party and came home to find out about Rob Reiner. The next day, the New York Times was calling me. CNN was calling me. WGN Radio was calling me. Me, not even Harlan, me directly, because they've mm-hmm. dealt with me before. They had my phone number. Mm-hmm. I don't use other people's tragedies to shine the spotlight on me. Mm-hmm. I'm there. I have been very, very lucky to have been friends with, worked with, in some cases been the confidant of, and in some cases the intimate partner of, some extraordinarily famous people. And in some cases, like John Lennon's death, I happened to be there as a witness. It just worked out that way. Has nothing to do with my talent, my career, because if we're talking about my talent, plug, I just recorded an album.
Yes.
Recorded an album. Jeffrey Marks sings the Ella Fitzgerald songbook, 14 songs with a big band, and it'll be out in July.
Okay.
So look for that, folks. Wherever you buy your music, either as a CD or electronically, you will be able to find it.
And vinyl is back. I mean, it has never left, but thanks to the DJs out there that has kept vinyl alive while they go through the transition of adding in new, taking away old or whatever. So one more question I want to ask you. What, in your opinion, we only have a few minutes, you know, we got to close out, but I want to know, in your opinion, what is the biggest privacy issue that celebrities face when being a celebrity? Does it come from friends, family, outside people? Who are they most likely to need to be more aware of than anything else, or situation or whatever?
You asked a very good question. I'll try to give you a short answer. It's a common, there's not one thing. Back in the day when everything was controlled by publicists, no one could just contact a celebrity and talk. You went through a publicist, or you went through a studio or a television network or a radio network or a record label or something. Today, every telephone has a camera. Every telephone has a recording device. Everywhere you go, I am not the biggest star in the world. I'm very aware of that. But every time I leave the house, I have to be prepared that it's a public appearance, because mm-hmm. everywhere I go, I'm recognized. Mm-hmm. Not mobbed by mobs of fans, but everywhere I go, every store, every restaurant, someone walks over to say hello and ask for an autograph. We have a picture with you. One has to be careful about how one looks. Dawn Wells from Gilligan's Island, Marianne, told me this. She said, Jeff, these cameras that are on phones are going to kill us, because you can't just go out to the store anymore. You have to get all dressed up to get a carton of milk, because the day you look like crap is the day someone's going to go click, and it's going to end up in the National Enquirer, which I don't think even exists anymore. I was in it. I was in the National Enquirer 3 times. One time they outed me. But there is that. It isn't like the old days where if you're caught doing something, your career is over. But how it gets spun can hurt careers, can hurt relationships, because they're still printing stuff that isn't true, or they're exaggerating what is true. And there are, to be fair to the press, who I love, the press has been very good to me. There are people out there who have publicists who aren't as honest as Harlan Bull.
Yes.
Who plant phony stories just to get their clients' names out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the National Enquirer pretty much lived off of those kinds of publicists who put their, it doesn't matter what they say about you, as long as they spell your name right, sweetie, who felt that was, who felt that's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And today it's different. Today, everybody's angry. Everybody's hurt. Everyone's looking for a reason to be hurt. And if you hurt the wrong people, not that you've done anything, but if the wrong people get hurt by you, it can really harm your career. Mm-hmm. And your career, our careers are our livelihoods. And for those of us in the arts, mm-hmm. that's how we express our souls. And if something happens in the press that ends our ability to do that, it's crushing.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer your question?
It does, because a lot of people think that when you become a celebrity, you know, you're a celebrity. So you're not, we're maybe thinking about that something could influence your people's opinion of you or by slandering your name or anything. I've had those things happen to me where I got very close to someone. And then rather than the person keeping the things that are personal, in order to impress other people or to make other people, whatever they were getting out of them, they revealed all of my, a lot of my personal information. And so now, not only am I very guarded, I'm very discerning about who I share things with and who I don't. And I'm a very honest person and will remain an honest person. But you really do have to be careful. And when you get to Jeffrey, even though, like Jeffrey said to somebody, he may not be a big deal himself, but he is a big deal if he has to worry about being photographed or be concerned about photographed, talked about, you're a big deal. Okay.
And so, this big deal has two shows he wants to plug real fast.
That's right. Go ahead.
Jeffrey Mark Plays Ella. GPE is on every week on 39 platforms around the world. I play Ella Fitzgerald's music on a theme and then give you insider stories about the music, the musicians, the song, the arrangements, and of course, Ella herself. Then that comes out on Sundays in time for brunch. Every week live, Wednesdays, 4 p.m. Pacific time, we have Still Talking With, our talk show, where Ben Bartlett and I have conversations like we're sitting around in the backyard having a cup of coffee and talking with some of the most fascinating, interesting people in the world. It's on the same 39 platforms. Sam should probably carry it on LA Talk Radio. Anyway, plug, plug, plug. That's what I'm doing. And the album. I'm still working on two books, and I'm rehearsing 70 songs for a singing tour next year. And I'm a guest on the Osiris Mounir Show.
Yes, you are. And thank you for being, I really, there are not many people that I feel some sort of affinity towards, even though I'm very social like yourself. But Jeffrey is one of those people that if you meet him and you're fortunate enough to meet him, you do kind of want to hang on to him. So I've always told his publicist, look, I'm not trying to take anybody. I just love people and I'm naturally have a heart. So I tend to express that if people don't know me. But anyway, before we go, you plugged your books. You plugged, where can we find you on social media? Where can we find about the books and everything like that? Tell us.
Okay. Jeffrey Mark, as it's spelled in the lower third below me right here, I'm on Facebook. Jeffrey Mark is on Instagram as Jeffrey Mark Showbiz, all one word. Okay. There's a GPE page, GPE Presents page on Facebook, because there's two more podcasts we're starting soon. I will soon have four shows. Right. Wow. But I'm doing different, all different shows. Okay. So all of that is there. Anytime I'm singing anywhere or doing comedy anywhere, it's on those pages. You can come see me in person and spend some money, please. And the books, you can find all the information about the books there. And, you know, hopefully if I come anywhere near you, come out and I'll sing some jazz and make you laugh and help alleviate the stresses and strains of everyday life. Come have a nice evening with me.
Ooh, and there are lots of them. So we have a wonderful person. I mean, I love him. I don't care if you do. I love him. We love him. A lot of people love him. So what I want to do is hit me up on my social media, Osiris_Mounir_the painter on IG, and just Google my name. We recently just put a bunch of stuff on feeds. So we are literally all over the place, all at the same time, everywhere. And so without your support, you know, we could not do this without you. I could do it without you, but it wouldn't be any fun to do it by myself. So I have to do it with somebody. You like doing it together, not doing it by yourself. So,
and boy, do you trust me not to say anything about that. Go ahead.
I know you would. I knew you'd pick it up. But I want to tell you, I love you. I love you for the kind of people you are, like I love this gentleman and like, because you stand up for what's right and you stand up for what we believe in. And without those things, what in the world would this globe and planet that we call Earth look like? So don't forget to smile. It works wonders. Thanks. Shout out to my beautiful, beautiful human being I know and love, Sam Hassan with LA Talk Radio. Without you, I would not be here. So thank you so much. And then again, shout out to Jeffrey Mark, the one and only Jeffrey. Do you want to say one more thing before we head out? We got like 1 minute.
Go. Harlan Bowl, get better really, really fast, because without you, my career stands still. So do everything what doctors say and heal that hip so you can get back on your feet and make me even more famous. All right?
All right.
We love you, Harlan. Get well. See you soon. Okay, everybody. I will talk to you later. Jeffrey, it's been a pleasure always, as always, having you on the show. And don't forget,
God bless and have a happy.
It works wonders.
You're listening to The Osiris Mounir Show, only on LA Talk Radio.